This is a Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello and welcome to a Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. How the hell do you spell human ashes? That's what the question was for her. How the hell do you spill human ashes? You know what the question was for me? How the hell did you know they were human ashes? Like, you saw the guy over there. Are you like, do you have CSI eyes? Can you analyze things with your eyeballs and know that they're human ashes as opposed to like wood ashes? Or, and you know, how did he know they were human ashes and that they were spilt all over him? It's just a weird, it's a very strange story.
Yeah.
Let us continue.
That night, as I was driving around camp, I stopped because I noticed one of my friends, his name's Ed Higgins, he was walking by himself. And so, you know, I kind of stopped and joked and said, oh my God, Ed, you're still here? I'm like, what are you doing, crazy? You know, and he was like, he's like, oh, you know, I'm hanging around. I was like, oh, how you doing? You know, and he's like, I was sick for a few days. I was in the hospital. He's like, and I just got back. And he said, he's like, someone else is in my tent. And I go, and at this point, I was so sick and tired of people, of hearing about people taking over on other people's tents just because they weren't there, or they thought they were abandoned, or stealing other people's things because they thought someone had abandoned their tent or their teepee or whatever because they went to town. I was so tired of that. And I was like, oh my God, Ed. I was like, who did this? Let's go find them. He said, no. He's like, I'm not worried about my stuff. I'm not worried about my stuff at all. He's like, and he started crying. And he's like, the only thing that that I want back is my mother's ashes. And I said, what? I was like, oh my God, Ed. And I hugged him. I said, oh my God, let's go to your tent. Let's go look. I said, I'll help you look. He said, I already looked. I said, let's go look again. So we went to his tent, and there was a female and a male in there. And I'm like, is this your tent? And they said, well, no, but Mowgli said we could stay here. I said, who is Mowgli? And they said, he's part of the security. And I said, that wasn't cool. I said, because you obviously saw that someone else's belongings were in this tent, yet you chose to take those and move them to another tent, according to Ed, and then you moved your stuff in here, and you know this tent isn't yours. And I was like, you know what? That was so rude. That's so impolite. I said, now you're going to have to come over here and help us search through this tent that you guys threw all of Ed's stuff in and help us find his mom's ashes. And they were like, okay, we will. And so we went over to this tent, and it was like a trash tent. People were like just pulling trash in there. And we were digging through it. Ed found some clothes of his, but we didn't find his mom. And at this point, he's really distraught.
Question.
I said, come on.
The guy that found Mowgli stealing, what was Mowgli stealing?
Whatever you could find. But the thing of value, like I said, was this woman's ashes.
Did he say specifically what he caught him stealing?
This woman's ashes.
Oh.
And other stuff.
So okay, I didn't understand because you said
why I was going into that story.
Right. No, but I was a little confused because I thought you said that Mowgli was caught stealing before, and he was.
Apparently, he was. Apparently, he's like a pathological OP.
Oh, okay. A kleptomaniac?
So, hello?
I said a kleptomaniac?
I guess so.
That was the major... Okay, so this is really weird to me because when she told me the story, she said that Vaughn said that he caught this guy who was stealing things and that he had human ashes all over him. And they had a conversation about, oh my God, how did he spill human ashes? And then when I asked her, so can you go back and tell me when Vaughn caught this guy stealing? Because unless you're a really horrible person, you don't just steal somebody else's human ashes. And they say that he was stealing other things originally. So I was thinking, oh, maybe he was in there stealing a bunch of things that he thought were valuable, and he mistakenly took something that he thought was valuable, but it had human ashes in it, and then he was freaked out and spilled it or something like that, you know? But it turns out, when I was like, so what was he stealing? And her first answer was, anything he could get his hands on. Like what? Like, there's no detail of what things of value, because you would think a thief would be stealing things of value, not only human ashes, but a response in the end is the only thing of value was the human ashes, and the only thing that he took was the human ashes. Which is really strange, but let's listen.
He got caught stealing someone's ashes, and that was Ed Hagen's mother.
So this guy that told you, was it Vaughn?
It was Vaughn.
Okay, so hold on. So when he saw Mowgli with human ashes on him, did he take a sample of those, or how did he know they were human ashes?
Because they were in a box, a white box, wrapped in a clear plastic bag, and it had Victoria, I can't remember her last name, but it had Victoria written on it. And he said he didn't register that it was ashes until a little while later. And he's like, ooh, that's some of his ashes. And so the night after I ran into Ed, we went to the horn and we prayed, and I said, Ed, just pray on it. I said, she'll come back to you. The Creator will help. And he said, okay. And then so we went our separate ways. And then the very next morning, when I was able to get signal, I got on Facebook, and I happened to come across Vaughn. He did a post where he said that he found someone stealing, and they had ashes, human ashes. So I messaged him, and I was like, Vaughn, I was like, are they in a white box that says Victoria, and they're in a clear plastic bag? And he said, well, who's looking? And I said, that's Ed Hagen's mom. He's like, he's going to have to identify it. And I said, too easy. I said, let me get a hold of Ed. So I was trying to get a hold of Ed, but I couldn't get a hold of him. And so I went over to his yurt, Vaughn's yurt, and I was like, Vaughn, I was like, that's Ed Hagen's mom. She's in a white box, right, and it's a clear plastic bag? And he said, yeah, okay. He's like, I trust you. And so he's like, is this her? And it was. So then we drove over to where Ed Hagen's was last seen, but he had already made his way up to Bismarck. And he called Ed on my phone, and he's like, Ed, what's your mom? And he said, a white box, the Victoria, clear plastic bag. Vaughn said, all right, well, I got your mom. He's like, I'm going to turn her over to L'Oreal, and L'Oreal will get it back to you. And he said, okay, thank you, you know.
Okay, so this is what's weird about this. I had never imagined that somebody could just tell by looking at another person that they had ashes on them, because she said he had that. The sequence of her story is really weird. First, she tells us that she was talking to Vaughn, and Vaughn told her the story of how he had caught this guy stealing. And it turned out he was stealing. He had human ashes all over him, and that those he was the one that caught him stealing those human ashes, right? So presumably he then takes possession of the box that's in the plastic bag. I never heard the story of how the plastic bag got open, or how the box got open, and how he spilled human ashes explained by her in the story, or to her by Vaughn in her story. So that seemed very odd. But I did ask Ed Higgins about this, and among the other things I asked him, he told me that none of the ashes were spilled, that the box is sealed, and that that couldn't have happened. So it's very odd that that detail is in there, and that it was used to elaborate this horrific crime. Mm-hmm. Not only is this Mowgli person a thief, but he took someone's mom mm-hmm. and spilled her ashes That's all horrible. Over himself.
That's so horrible. I don't even know why she's talking about this. This seems like...
I know, it freaked me out when she mm-hmm. started talking about human ashes. I'm like, oh my God, this story gets crazier and crazier. Okay, go on. Did your security team catch Mowgli, or did Vaughn catch Mowgli? Did you guys...
Vaughn caught him.
And, well, I mean, like threw him out of the camp, or had him arrested?
Well, that's where it gets confusing, because... Apparently, I think one of the headsmen, and I don't know, if you talk to Vaughn or whatever, you're going to have to clear it up. Right now, I'm going off of what I think I remember he said, and it's that he talked to the headsman, and the headsman said to have him leave, but the little clique, that clique security force that Mobley was with, protected him. They wouldn't allow Vaughn to remove him.
What clique was that?
I think, if I remember, that's Regis Berlin's clique, the Michigan, they're at the Michigan tent.
The Michigan tent. Were they a security team?
They were one of the security cliques, one of the security groups.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand. I don't really understand the functioning or the...
Yeah, it's so confusing because it was like there was all these little cliques of security that each one wanted to be the top dog. You know what I mean? Like, be security. And they weren't working together. North Dakota, she's pony. Hold on. They weren't working together, and everyone wanted to outdo each other, and some of them knew that the guys that they had on their security team should never be on a security team, but yet they were still protecting them. Mm-hmm. So it was annoying. And the other annoying thing was like, every time the headsman gave Vaughn an order to remove someone or escort them off, and Vaughn tried, and then that person turned right around and said, well, I want to talk to the headsman and see what they have to say for themselves. So then he'd take them over to the headsman, and then the headsman, specifically Manabe, would be like, he would backpedal. He'd be like, oh, okay, well, maybe we can work this out. Maybe you don't have to get kicked off, type of thing. And I'm like, that's not what you said earlier. You know what I mean? So it made us look bad when we were trying to enforce something in order that they gave us earlier.
Were there any people that were in the camp that were forcibly removed because of their activities that you did report to the police or that simply did get removed?
The only one that I can say for sure was about to get removed. But ended up just leaving on his own was that, what's his name, JR American Horse. He was kind of like a leader of those agitators.
Which agitators?
I don't know. A group of young boys agitating, always going to the bridge and trying to start stuff. And
did they have a name?
What's that?
Did they have a name?
I don't know. They did. Names at that point, if I was going to be working with you on a daily basis, then I really didn't remember names. I'm horrible with names.
Who else was in that group?
Which group?
The JR American Horse group.
I don't know. His young guys that were following him?
But you don't know any other names?
No.
Okay,
I didn't care.
Who was Travis? Because Travis... one more question before that. So you said this is the only other... the person that you know of that was actually removed out of all those different kinds of crimes that you heard, like rape and things like this.
Well, there were other people that were supposed to get removed, but like I said, when... once...
Did you catch the rapist? Did you guys catch the rapist?
We were gone at that.
Okay, I just wanted to stop right there to have you guys take a look at what she's talking about, because Bill Runningfisher talked about J.R. American Horse. And he said very specific things about J.R. American Horse. It wasn't just like what she said, that they were suspected of having weapons. No weapons were found, but yet he was removed. It wasn't just Russell's family. J.R. American Horse was also removed, and these are pretty serious allegations
that are being made here.
He's saying the Sioux Warrior Society, American Horse, is the group who brought weapons into camp in a white 80s model RV. They are led by J.R. American Horse, who was thrown out of camp on December 3rd. He was the inventor of propane IED. Okay, this is really crazy because she said she was made head of security on December 8th through 11th.
Yeah.
This is when she was asked to do this by the headsman. 8 to 11. And thereafter, she was asked, her and a group of her veterans, to do some weapons sweeps in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Running Fisher showed up out of nowhere and put together her team for her and didn't tell her who was on her team. And that she was pretty impressed by the fact that he got her team for her so
mm-hmm.
quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of self-appointed himself to that, but she seemed to be okay about it. And he's now saying that she's telling me that he got thrown out of camp.
Mm-hmm.
He is saying that this man got thrown out of camp. But how did Bill Running Fisher already work on camp security on December 3rd when L'Oreal Blackshaw hadn't even been appointed to the head of camp security until the 15th, I think she said?
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't even start to do anything with security at the camp until the 8th through the 10th or 11th? Did he have a time machine? Did he go back in time? How did he do it? Because this guy, JR American Horse, was thrown out of camp on December 3rd.
Yeah.
And look at the specific thing that they're saying he did. This is what Bill Running Fisher said he did. She said it was because of weapons. This guy says he was the inventor of propane IED that caused that girl's arm to be blown off. I am assuming he's speaking of Sophia Wolanski.
Those are lies.
My company works with stun grenades, and they don't cause that kind of damage. He sounds like the Morton County Sheriff's Department.
He does.
He is the organizer of a lot of violent actions against police. Whoa! There's another huge accusation. J.R. Yeah. American Horse is the organizer of a lot of violent actions against police.
Wow.
Doesn't say what or how or why. Just says all of that stuff. Wow. Crazy, mm-hmm. crazy stuff. And this is stuff that just, like, afterwards, he kind of lets spill out. All right. Let's go back.
By that point, Vaughn and I were gone. The security had turned on itself and started doing direct action themselves. And at that point, the elders, the Emanope, asked me and Vaughn to step away and to we weren't kicked out of camp, but just to stay away from camp while all of that was going, was happening.
When did
because
you
they didn't want. I left on the 29th.
Okay. So that's kind of when things went sideways.
Yeah.
I
flew out the morning of the 29th because the elders were like, you know, we don't want your name or your face associated with all of that negative stuff that's going on.
What elder?
They encouraged Faith.
Okay.
They encouraged me to just go home and get my medicine, which is my kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I did.
And Vaughn left at the same time as you did?
Yeah, he was, he's been staying at the casino, I guess.
Okay.
After that,
Do you know when Bill Running Fisher left the camp? Okay. So she's saying basically at that point, she and Vaughn left camp. How'd she know when? She keeping tabs on Vaughn?
I
thought he said he wasn't her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew when he left camp. Well, maybe they were just hanging out a lot. But Vaughn and her left camp at the same time. I'm sorry I haven't been able to keep up with all your comments and questions on the show. We have a lot of interview, I regret to say. I know the show is going to already take us 3 to 4 hours to complete just going through and marking some of these important moments in the interview so that you can recall and remember how they're connected to the interviews of Melanie Stoneman, the interviews of Bill Running Fisher, and as well as the interviews and commentary from witnesses Jesse Sankey, Josh Long, and also Russell Vasquez, the grandson of Mary Trujillo. the 82-year-old elder woman with dementia who is sitting in a hospital alone by herself right now because her family was taken from her. Someone else took over her guardianship, and Kathleen Bennett is now sitting in a jail cell. That's what's going on right now. Interestingly, I think I saw that one of the, because they were talking about Headsman, I saw messages flying by and I saw the name Archie Fulbear mentioned. And I believe someone told me that Archie Fulbear was sending information to Rob Port of the Forum.
Oh, really?
And that he was writing up all the gossip out there. Because, you know, we know what Rob Port is like. He doesn't like Native Americans. But that's here in the Forum in Fargo. We have a writer who is a blogger. They picked up his blog, but he's written a lot of really horrible things about Standing Rock and about this action to protect the water. Let's listen to some more of what she said when she's out. She's gone. Mm-hmm. She's leaving.
No, I didn't even know that he had left. Apparently he left, came back. I don't know. And which is really surprising because initially, whenever I first got to Standing Rock, he was like constantly text messaging me like, "Hey, do you need this? Do you need that?" You know what I mean? And I was like, not really, you know, like, do you need help with this? Do you need help? And, no, I don't think so, you know. It was just, and then, I don't know, I guess he got his foot in the door with the security, I don't know, and then he went off on his own.
Hmm. So, is he still back at the camp?
Billy? I have no idea. The last I knew, he was home. I think he has a job.
Okay. So,
I'd have to text him and ask him, but it takes him a while to respond.
Okay. So, with the Veterans for Standing Rock, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, that whole thing was its own controversy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you were the, you know, the face out there, on the ground anyway. And then there was Michael Wood and Wesley Clark. And there was a split there at some point. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what happened with Wes? Because what I saw in the news, what everybody saw in the media was that he was out there doing some things, but, you know, he was kind of not visible a lot of the time, too. It's weird, you know? So I wanted you to clear up what really happened. You were there.
When you called, I was just getting out of the shower, so can you kind of bear with me for a second? I'm going to get dressed and go out and smoke a cigarette so my signal may, you know,
drop out.
Go in and out. Yeah. So just can you give me 1 second? Let me just get dressed, like, go out and smoke a cigarette and talk to you about this.
Sure. Do you want me to stay on the line or do you want me to hang up?
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
Stay on the line.
Okay, great.
I suppose we had to wait a few minutes for her to come back, but it's still running.
Yeah. Here are the invoices that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Three invoices that were billed to Bill Running Fisher, Von Bull Lodge's cousin.
Hello, Lisa Ware?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, regards to Wes, bless his soul, bless his heart. He's a good guy. He had good intentions. You know, and you know, this is all from what I've witnessed. This is all my personal opinion.
Sure.
Nobody else's.
Of course.
So I knew Wes was on a spiritual journey. Because Wes was an atheist prior to this.
Really?
And yeah, and he recently found God. And not only did he find God, but then he wanted to. You're welcome. He wanted to be on that spiritual. whole Native American journey as well. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, when we were initially talking before we ever got to Standing Rock, he mentioned that there was some medicine man trying to contact him for this and that, and I just said, whoa, Wes, hold on, wait a minute there. I said, because first of all, I said, you need to be careful. I said, whenever you're on a journey, your spiritual journey, medicine men don't contact you. You contact them. You offer them tobacco, and then you ask for their advice, and you ask for guidance and whatnot and what you need. I said, so for someone to contact you, tells me that they have different intentions, their own agenda. Mm-hmm. But I just want to warn you about that. And he said, okay, I'll listen. And so when we got there, and it all became clear later on after everything that happened and I started connecting the dots, Wes went there with good intentions to help Standing Rock in any way that he could, but at the same time, he had all these so-called medicine men pulling him to the side, saying he had to do this and that, and kind of like manipulating him. And come to find out, those medicine men were sent by Phyllis Young.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it with her?
Apparently, Phyllis Young and Wes's dad are friends.
Let me just
and
stop
so
this for
Wes
a second.
Became involved.
So I just want to point you all back to how this is all connected to the Veterans for Standing Rock, because this is what it says on L'Oreal Blackshall's invoice. The man who falsely claimed to kidnap this elderly woman, a direct descendant of the massacre of Wounded Knee. This woman and her family, Mary Trujillo, and her daughter, Kathleen Bennett, and her grandson, Russell. And that's Russell's girlfriend over here. This family was torn apart. Kathleen is now in a jail, falsely accused of elder abuse. Her mother, who has dementia, is sitting alone in a hospital wondering if her family abandoned her. She spent her birthday, Christmas Day, by herself. Her family denied even the opportunity to speak with her on the phone. Nothing. And this is where it all goes back to. L'Oreal Blackshall, Vets for Standing Rock. And this man, Bill Running Fisher, who never mentioned these invoices to me, who never gave me L'Oreal Blackshall's number, never told me he really knew her. She was just the head of security out there. She was the one responsible. By the way, the people out there that are running the show now, Chase Iron Eyes, they're not doing a very good job. Look who they appointed. This woman, she dropped the ball, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of throwing some people under the bus on the way out there. And she signs these invoices. She just told us that. On December 17th, the same exact day that Billy Running Fisher makes this false police report to Morton County. But somehow, neither Veterans for Standing Rock nor anybody associated with them is willing to take any responsibility for what's going on here. She rose to the head of security of the vets, of the head of security. She was the PR person for the Veterans for Standing Rock. She became the head of security for the entire camp, but she doesn't know who's on her security team. And nobody here is responsible for having to report a crime against an elder woman. That seems fine, doesn't it? All right, let's listen to more.
You know, Phyllis Young was my contact when we were all coming in, and she told me, oh, yes, you're welcome. I have the community buildings open. I have gyms. We have a bus system that's going to transport the vets to and from camp and to the gyms and to the community centers. We have food. And I was like, yes, that sounds great. That sounds awesome. Thank you so much. But when we got there, there was nothing in play. and that's what left a lot of my vets stranded. The only community center to ever open themselves up was in Kennel, and that was Janet Whitebull. She opened up her community center, and they cooked and they fed what vets that we filtered over there, or that got put there. Mm-hmm. She was the only one that welcomed us native way.
Wow.
Yeah. So now that I put two and two together, I think Phyllis was trying to manipulate Wes because she thought that if she can manipulate Wes, then she could get control of the money. But Wes never had control of the money. Michael did.
And how did Michael and Wes respond when all these people got stranded there, the vets?
Oh my gosh, we were in work mode at that point. We were just like, what do we need to do? How do we get this fixed? We were just scrambling. I mean, I literally went to the general manager of the casino and bawled my eyes out. And I said, can you please just open up your pavilion for us so that way, that we can have somewhere to at least be, secure, warm, safe. And I explained the whole thing of what happened with Phyllis, and he was like, yeah. He's like, I'm gonna help you out as best as I can, and so he was great. The general manager was great.
Wasn't Phyllis out there at the pavilion too?
Who?
Phyllis?
Yes, she was there. She had rooms there. She had rooms at the casino. Every time I saw this woman, she was going up to the front desk and saying, I need three rooms, or I need a room, and she'd big hand over keys.
So she was at the casino, and she was the reason why this happened, where you didn't have the things you needed for the vets.
Yeah, and see, at that time, I didn't speak it publicly. I didn't say anything out loud because I was raised by my mom.
Not even to Michael or Wes?
Oh, I told Michael. I told Michael. Michael knew. But I didn't publicly speak out against her because I was taught, even though she's still an elder.
Yeah, and, but I mean, you could have told Wes privately too, right?
I did tell Wes. Wes didn't want to believe me.
Huh?
Wes didn't want to think that way of Phyllis.
Oh, I see. I couldn't understand what you said before. He didn't want to believe you.
Yeah.
I see. So you tried to warn him. Did you tell him that she had promised to help and that she...
Yep. He said, because he got mad at me. He was like, this is all your fault, L'Oreal, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know what, Wes? This isn't my fault. This is your friend Phyllis's fault. She said that she had everything set up for us, and she didn't have nothing set up. I said, so you can blame your friend Phyllis for that. And he's like, no, it's not her fault. And so we got into an argument. And in a military way, he checked me. Because, like I said, we were working under the military structure. I was a sergeant major. He was a colonel. He checked me. So once he checked me, I went to parade rest, and I just continued to stand there while he yelled at me in the casino.
You know, I don't understand military. Okay, so I just have to stop it right there, because here's a weird thing. And I have to warn y'all, my phone has been plugged in the entire freaking time that I have been live streaming. So it should be charging, not battery dying. But it says my battery's almost dead. So we'll just keep going till the wheels come off. And hopefully we'll be able to stay on the broadcast and on the air. But if that does not work, I will let my phone charge up a little bit and come back as soon as I can to finish up the rest of this part of the interview. There is another part of the interview, but I think that doing 4 hours of programming is probably all I can handle for this interview. It's a lot to ingest, and I want to make sure that it's really sequential so you can follow what's going on, okay? But I want you to remember, I think it's really important for you to remember, that Phyllis, according to her, she trusted her. She was coordinating with Phyllis, and this is what she said, in her video of December 18th, which was on her wall. I think it was called, like, Here We Go.
Yeah.
But it's gone now. And she said, we didn't have structural shelters in place, and that was because I was coordinating with Phyllis Young of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, who informed me that she had community centers, open gyms, open, and food in there available for our people to be sheltered. And transport. There would be a bustum. None of that happened. So I took it upon myself. That's my fault. I trusted in someone and it didn't happen. So it left a lot of my guys without shelter. This was a person who she had been coordinating with, who she had been working with from the tribe, from the council of the tribe, who had promised her shelter and food for the veterans from the stand for Standing Rock and did not come through. And then there they are at the casino hanging out with Phyllis. So this was probably not a very fun situation. I'm imagining it was pretty tense. She doesn't sound too happy about it. And I did ask her, did she tell, because she didn't tell anybody else. Y'all didn't hear about this thing with Phyllis, like letting all the vets down. That wasn't part of any stories I heard. And I remember seeing her in videos at the pavilion. That's why I said, wait a minute. Phyllis from the tribe, she left all the vets out in the cold. And nobody said that. Nobody called her out. Nobody put that out there that she was the reason why the casino was overrun, that she was the reason why the pavilion in the first place, mixed with people that had to be evacuated from the camp, such as Russell's grandma. And she said she did tell Wes. He didn't want to believe it. And she did tell Mike, but he did listen to her. So let's continue listening to what she has to say about that. And she's talking about Wes, too. Now, she's saying Wes lost his mind and started yelling at her. Here we go. Speak very well because I don't have a military background, so you'll have to forgive me. But what does check me mean? I don't understand.
People rank. When someone outranks you and they pull rank, you have to shut up and listen. You have to show them that respect.
So how does somebody pull rank? Do they say, I'm the colonel?
Yep. He said, I'm the colonel and you're the sergeant major. Because officers outrank and listen. And the highest enlisted that you can get is a sergeant major.
Okay. All right. I don't understand these things, but okay. Thank you for explaining.
And
I just want to point this out because I had heard a lot of people say that Phyllis was the one that got the pavilion opened for the vets. But here you clearly hear her say that she, L'Oreal, Black Shawl, she bawled out her eyes and begged them to open up the pavilion. Remember that a minute ago? Mm-hmm. She just said that. You can go hear it later on. You can go rewind it. But she said she went and bawled out her eyes to beg them to open the pavilion. And it was all because of Phyllis that this even happened. Continue.
And when I saw your video, you said that I was speaking to these veterans and yelling at them or whatever. That's what we do in the military. That's how we get them to listen and to understand who is in charge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I was in military mode.
Yeah, I don't understand that culture at all, honestly. But no, I respect it, but I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all.
That's how we keep discipline and order in the military.
Okay. So what was he yelling at you? What was he saying exactly?
That it was my fault that all the veterans were stranded and blah, blah, blah. I failed. Everything was my fault at that point. So
did Michael feel the same way about you?
Did Michael what?
Did Michael feel the same way about you?
No, he didn't. Because after that, I went back into the pavilion and I asked the... one of the managers there for the microphone so I can make an announcement to all the guys in the pavilion in regards to, you know, meal cards, we're going to pay for your meals, and I noticed that there was some already drunk veterans there, so I wanted to limit their alcohol intake. And in the military world, you can do that. You can tell a soldier, like, when to stop drinking and this and that. So we arranged that we would hand out liquor or drink tickets. I wasn't paying for any alcohol at all, but in order for them to purchase alcohol, they had to show the bartender a ticket, give them a ticket. And so we limited everyone to 3 tickets.
I see. So at that, I have to stop it there and just analyze this real quick. I got things in my mind, things that came to my mind when I heard this. I was like, okay, first of all, I remember her saying earlier in the program that when the blizzard hit, they evacuated, and she called it mission complete and told all of the veterans, go home. Of course, now they needed to evacuate them. That's how come they ended up at the pavilion. They didn't have proper shelters, so they needed to get them out of there because they're going to strain the resources of the tribe and the hotel, and they were stressing the resources of the tribe and the hotel. So, and this is something that I heard from Michael Wood Jr. as well, that, you know, they decided when they got there, in the moment they got there, the blizzard hit, they needed to go, and they said, we've accomplished our mission. Just by coming here, the Army Corps of Engineer, they got scared and they decided not to grant that easement, so we've accomplished our mission and we're done. You'll hear that in an upcoming show. Unfortunately, these interviews are long, but they're very chock full of information, so that's good for all of us because we can learn a lot about this. But I found it interesting that she would say that, because are they still, I don't know, she didn't actually get this duty to clean up the camp and be the head of security that stayed behind until between the 8th and the 11th, according to her own statement previously. But now, on the 6th, when the camp is evacuated, on the very first day, the same day that Bill Running Fisher claims to have found this elder woman caked in her own urine and feces in a green army tent, which he had to evacuate via ambulance to the casino, there they are at the pavilion, all the veterans. She has to beg. She, L'Oreal, not the tribe leadership, not the Standing Rock Sioux tribe leadership, not Phyllis Young. She, L'Oreal, has to beg for them to open the pavilion. And she's in there. And now she has to pull rank on these guys that have already been dismissed. You're dismissed. Mission accomplished. I can tell you how much to drink. And also, she saw there was some drunk vets already in there. Mm-hmm. And so they were going to limit the drink tickets to 3. It's a very confusing story, but I just wanted to point out that because I was like, that's weird. They told the veterans to go home. They're sitting around in a pavilion, sleeping on the floor, and they're now telling them you can only have 3 drink tickets.
Yeah.
What else?
At that point, veterans could only get drinks if they gave them a ticket and showed their ID. And of course, we checked IDs before we handed out tickets. So I got the microphones, but as I was speaking, Phyllis apparently heard that I was giving out free drinks, which was not the case. There was no way we were going to pay for alcohol. We were paying for meals, but not alcohol. And she was upset, and she came in with this guy named Remy, and they wrestled the microphone from me, and then she was like, she's been relieved of duty, and her position, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and to me, that was hilarious, because number one, she's not a part of our organization in order to do that. So, that was hilarious to me. So, at that point...
Okay. This is very confusing to me. Because she said, Phyllis Young walked in with a guy named Remy because she had heard that L'Oreal was handing out drink tickets, and she thought she was paying for these people's alcohol, and that wasn't the case. She was simply limiting how many drinks they could have in total, 3 of them, which is what she just explained with the drink tickets were for.
Mm-hmm.
But she misunderstood. Phyllis Young misunderstood, whatever. She went up there with Remy, wrestled the microphone away from her, and told her she was relieved of duty. And she thought, that's hilarious. You can't tell me what to do. I'm not part of your organization. I'm here with the Veterans for Standing Rock. But here's what's funny about that. Here's why that's interesting. Not ha-ha funny, but like, what? That doesn't make no sense to me. Because In her original statement on December 18th, she said that she was in coordination with Phyllis Young from the very beginning to bring the veterans standing with Standing Rock to the camp. That's who she coordinated with at the camp. I was in coordination with Phyllis Young, who was a Standing Rock Sioux Tribe representative, a leader, I believe. And then she talks about how all of the veterans came in, blah, blah, blah. But she also talks about what their, the way in which, and she talked about it in this interview too, I don't know if you remember it, the way in which they were conditioning the folks that were coming in. They needed to go through cultural sensitivity training. They needed to get what she called cold weather reports. They were required to understand that Indigenous people live in a matriarchal society so that Phyllis and people like her would be calling the shots, would be leading the veterans, not men. Men would not be leading the veterans. Incidentally, she tells me during her interview that it was the heads of security, the men, who with their egos were ruining her ability to lead within this movement. So she decided to quit trying. But when it comes to respecting the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, I know that Michael Wood said, and his intent was, that when they got there, they were going to do what the leadership of the tribe asked them to. And when they were told during the blizzard that they needed to evacuate and leave and that they were going to be straining the resources of the tribe, of course they were going to leave, and the sooner the better. And they were not going to contraband, because they weren't going to come in there like the white saviors and telling the native people what to do. Of course they were going to leave. Of course they were going to do whatever the Standing Rock Sioux tribe asked them to do, wished for them to do. But here, something changes. Because here, L'Oreal gets relieved of duty as the person, the major sergeant for the tribe. I mean, excuse me, for the Veterans for Standing Rock. But also, she said that the tribal headsman and the leadership of the tribe's Faith Spotted Eagle asked her to be head of camp security, to help with the camp security, to do the security sweeps for weapons, right? So now Phyllis is not important. Earlier in this interview, just moments ago, I said, how is it that you didn't tell anybody that Phyllis was responsible for the vets all being stuck without shelter? Because she was the one supposedly in charge of coordinating that with you. And she said, well, I didn't want to do that because she's my elder. But now, when the microphone literally is wrestled out of her hand and she's relieved of her duty and her position, she's like, ha, 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 that's funny. She can't tell me what to do because she's not part of our organization. Funny how that happens, huh? Interesting. Moving on.
Boy, I went looking for Michael. I found Michael and I explained to him what had happened with Phyllis saying this, and he just laughed. He's like, and I was like, Michael, am I really the duty? And hold on, somebody keeps calling in, I gotta turn it off. Anyway,
you asked him if you were relieved of duty, and what did he say?
Hold on 1 second, this call keeps coming in and I can't turn it off. Anyway. So he's like, no, and he laughed. And I said, Michael, I need you to come into the pavilion and get on the microphone and explain to our veterans exactly that. And he said, okay. So he came in, he got on the microphone, and he said, this is L'Oreal Vetchall. She's our appointed sergeant major. And he's like, I trust her. He's like, I'm not here to make a decision. Then you go to her, and she makes the decisions. Whatever decision she makes, I will back up. And that's what he said.
Okay, did everybody hear that? That was an important part. I'm going to repeat it for you if you didn't hear it, because it's very important. After Phyllis Young relieved her of duty and said, basically, get out of here, she went to Michael Wood Jr. and she said, am I relieved of duty? And she'd already explained to Michael that Phyllis was responsible for this whole mess. And Michael said, no, you're not relieved of duty. And then she says he went out and got the microphone. And he gave an announcement and he said, this person here, L'Oreal Blackshaw, you got any questions? If she gives any orders, you back her. This is my girl, L'Oreal. That's what she's telling me. Wood Jr. did. And I will have his interview for you later on. I will tell you that he told me that he did back L'Oreal, that he did know about that, and that he did do that. What I find interesting is that she would have dropped the ball, as everyone keeps calling it, so horribly that she would have risen to the echelons of all of everything so quickly and failed so miserably in the most basic of duties, reporting crimes, removing real dangerous people from the camp, which she claims were allowed to stay despite being caught stealing human ashes, and all sorts of other crazy things, and including not even setting up her own security team and billing what people on that video on December 18th, which she removed, were calling fraud. That's what the people on her own live stream video were calling her invoicing of $131,800 and some odd dollars to Veterans for Standing Rock. And guess who her partner was in invoicing for these invoices, totaling over $131,000 for security equipment for veterans, supposedly. It was Bill Running Fisher. It was Billy Running Fisher, the head of her security team, self-appointed according to herself, the person that just told her, oh, I can get all that equipment that you need from my company. But the people said they looked up these prices and they are ridiculous. Look at the prices for the things that are on these invoices. The people that were on her live video stream, which she has now removed, said that many of these could be found online for a much lower price.
Actually, her Facebook site is back up and everything's still there.
Ooh, it had been gone for a while.
Yep.
It went black for a while. Maybe she put it up so we can find all this stuff. Cool. Then you can go watch the video. Go watch the video and finish watching it because there's a lot of stuff on it. All right, let's listen some more. So after that happened, how did you end up getting chosen to stay there afterwards? And, oh, by the way, real quick, you never heard of or saw this elder woman at the casino?
No.
The one that was moved there?
No.
Okay.
I've never met her. I've never laid eyes on her.
Okay. And you don't remember meeting Russell?
No. Well, I think I remember seeing his face, and after all of that, after I was already back at camp, after all the veterans were gone, most of them, the majority of them were gone, and when I was trying to still integrate with the security force, I remember seeing his face a few times. And so I was like, oh, okay. And I felt really, really awful when I heard him say that, you know, he's met me a few times, and I never mentioned his grandmother. And because, like I said, at that point, I did not know about any of that.
And you had never met his mom either?
No.
Okay. Okay. So, like, going back to where we were then, so...
Wait, hold on. I can't say I never met her. I met a lot of people during that whole confusion at the casino. I may have not, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at Facebook or whatever to see what his mom looks like. So.
Well, because if you had seen his grandmother...
I didn't see her.
And his mom at the casino on December 6th, and... you saw her looking fine, then that would totally refute Billy Running Fisher's story. That's why I was.
I didn't see her when Billy came up to ask for the room. It was him and Christine, just those two.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So going back to this story, when you got told that you were not relieved, and he announced it to everybody in the pavilion. After that, how did the decision get made that you were going to stay behind to clean up after the Standing Rock vets left.
I was supposed to fly out on the 9th. On, I think it was the 6th or the 7th, that's when I got pulled into the meeting with Priest and the headman and Vaughn, the security guy.
Your phone is making a really weird sound. I can't hear you very
well. Yeah, I know. I'm outside. I'm in the wind. I'm about to go inside. Give me 1 second. I had to go outside to smoke a cigarette.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm going back in.
It's all right.
So cold. Let's see. That when she had asked to if the vets, if we could keep a small element of vets behind to help assist with security, that's when I went to Michael and I told him what had happened, and he said, "Oh yeah, for sure." And I said, "We can also clean up our mess that we left behind." And he said, "Oh yeah, let's do that." He's like, "We don't want to leave a mess, you know. We want to come in. That wasn't our intent, was to come in and leave a mess behind, because a lot of when that blizzard blew in, a lot of the vets, their personal tents and whatnot collapsed. They left a lot of gear because the evac was so quick that they just jumped in vehicles and made it to the casino with what they had. So there was a lot of gear left behind. It was a huge mess, and we wanted to clean that up. So we both agreed that it would." He said, "You know, Michael, like, are you okay with this? Are you comfortable with staying longer?" And I said, "Yes, I'm fine with that, as long as, you know, we clean up our mess." And so Michael was supportive of me in that capacity.
Okay, and so when did that decision get made? When he was still there, or afterwards, or how?
Well, Michael was still there when we made the decision that I was going to stay to help with the security and help with the cleanup.
Help me understand the timeline. In what order did the things happen? Because at some point, Wes and
what morning was it? It was, I think it was Monday morning. What day does that fall on? Because everything was so chaotic. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I think it was Monday morning, Monday afternoon, when the roads started getting clear. Monday, possibly Tuesday, it could have been Tuesday as well, but they just blend together because we were just running around trying to. Michael was in charge of evacs and all of that, and his guys, and I was in charge of our vets at the casino and in keeping them fed. At some point, we just stopped feeding vets. We just started feeding everybody. Like, we just were paying for 100 people at a time in the buffet line. You know what I mean? Just like, next 100 people, swipe the credit card, paid for them. Next 100 people came through, swipe the card, paid for them, you know?
And that was on Monday. This is on a Monday. Right?
It was either a Monday or a Tuesday when we thought everyone was gone. And I think it was Tuesday because Michael was leaving that day.
And this was on the 5th and the 6th of December.
Did the Tuesday fall on the 6th or the 7th?
The 6th.
Yeah, it sounds right, 7 to 6.
Yep.
Yeah. The mission was for the 4th through the 7th.
Right.
And I know that Michael and everyone else had planned on being out by the 7th.
Okay. So you were appointed to do this job on the 5th?
For security and cleanup, yeah, that sounds about right.
Or the 6th?
The 5th or the 6th. It was before Michael left. So Michael left on the 7th, I believe. So it was either the 5th. I'm going to say it was the 5th.
And what day did the team of Michael and Wes split up?
It was that morning that Michael was leaving because I asked the general manager if he could open up one of the banquet rooms so we can filter in some of the people sleeping out there on the floor.
So would that have been on the 5th or the 6th?
What What are you asking?
When they split up, when did they make that decision to ask him to go?
I'm getting to that.
We're going to take a half-hour break from the story, let you listen to some music, and return in 1/2 hour for more of this story.